Future Nonprofit is presented by Classy. Are you a nonprofit feeling the pressure of constant change and evolving supporter expectations? Are you searching for new ways to engage your community in this new era of fundraising? At Future Nonprofit, we seek out the top technology helping propel our sector forward, which is why Classy by GoFundMe is a trusted partner of ours. Classy's online fundraising platform empowers organizations to connect, engage, and grow. With Classy's latest innovation, Classy Studio, you can create personalized fundraising experiences that truly resonate. Build connections, unleash creativity, and raise more faster. And now, with new features like intelligent ask amounts, which provide personalized donation amounts for each supporter who lands on your page, and improved embedded donation forms, which lead a donor through an optimized checkout flow without leaving your website. Classy's full suite of tools is further engineered for conversion while also allowing you to create lasting relationships. The only question left is, what will you build? The future of fundraising is now with Classy. For more information, visit classy.org. That's C-L-A-S-S-Y.org.
It became very clear that access to quality healthcare for families living in poverty is very unattainable. And so you have kids who have very simple sicknesses who can't go to school because they can't buy the very basic drugs that they need to care for that. It becomes very clear that if you don't have money or you live far away from a health center, the quality of life really does suffer.
Medical emergencies can happen to anyone. But for people living in extreme poverty without access to affordable care within distance, a treatable health concern often turns into a lifelong disability. Thanks to the dedication of the team at Cure International and President and CEO Justin Narducci, there's a lifeline for millions of young children at risk of facing a lifetime of hardship with a debilitating, albeit treatable, health condition.
A lot of people are just struggling with really basic things that could be treated with some really basic healthcare. And then they also have some more complicated things, which is the space we fill, where we're providing a specialized surgical care that would just never be available to families.
The team at Cure International is dedicated to providing the highest standard of surgical care to vulnerable children living with disabilities. With a passion to serve, Justin is not only leading the charge to bring world-class care to children who need it most, he's also innovating ways to make their work simple and reproducible.
We have 8 hospitals. They're all over the world. They're in different places, but we had these common challenges, right? And we had to come up with solutions that essentially everybody could implement the same way, even with all of the different local requirements.
In this episode, we'll hear how Justin answered the call to serve those in need. We'll discover how he's harnessing his for-profit experience to fuel innovation and accelerate Cure's vision across Africa and beyond. And we'll unpack how he's prioritizing both patients and people to pave the way to a better future. Welcome to Future Nonprofit, a podcast about what it will take to build and scale the nonprofit of tomorrow. I'm your host, Ted Vaughn, partner at Historic and author of Culture Built My Brand. Join me as we unpack the stories and lessons of today's most innovative leaders.
When I was 17 or 18, our church was going on a mission trip to another country. And it was the first time I had expanded my exposure to things outside of small sort of Western American context. And there was a moment where we were kind of having some downtime. And I very clearly remember seeing children in this area who were scavenging for food in the trash. And we were kind of by a dump, and there are animals grazing there. There's birds, you know, sort of flocking to the food. And there's these very small kids who are clearly very hungry. And they were eating trash for sustenance. And it was one of those moments where I only think I've heard the voice of God once, and it was in that area. And it was very clearly a call to go do something that helped kids like that. And so I've always really felt a call to serve children. And thankfully, in what I do today, I get to do that. What I did before, I get to do that. and especially children who are in really dire conditions or extreme poverty, and try to do something that helps them live a full life. But it was that moment, what is that, 25 years ago now? I can remember it like it was yesterday, and the feeling I had there and the conviction I had there. And it's taken me a long time to be able to do that in a way that I think is meaningful. But it was a transformative moment for me.
That profound moment in Justin's life became a catalyst, one that instilled passion and conviction, and eventually led to his work in Africa.
I don't think I've ever had a geographic focus as much as a focus on trying to serve people who are sort of at the bottom of the development pyramid. And that typically, today's age, is on the African continent, but it's also in different parts of Asia and certainly Central and South America. And Africa is a whole huge continent, and it's very different from west to east and north to south. And there's some incredible beauty, and there's some incredible wealth, and there's also some incredible challenge and poverty and heartache across the continent, not unlike our own country or, you know, countries all over the world.
Justin's career didn't start in nonprofit work. Instead, he took his global calling and applied it to his studies on international business. He majored in business administration and went on to get his MBA in international business, which opened the door for him to work at Boeing. Yet while most Boeing employees spend their entire careers there, for Justin, it was a springboard, and a valuable one at that.
The Boeing opportunity provided me a great foundation of how to run an organization. They're very efficient in how they do what they do and do very complicated things well. And it allowed me to have exposure to an international client in that regard, who we interfaced with regularly. And I learned a lot about working cross-culturally and how people understand contracts differently and money differently. And even though we're trying to accomplish the same thing, they have a different perspective on things and meeting people where they're at. I mean, we had customers from the Middle East in our building. And so for me to go over there every day and just work through issues and trying to help solve problems with them, I learned a lot about working cross-culturally. But it wasn't really my heart. It wasn't really what I felt I was called to do. And so over the last few years, I've really been fortunate enough to have different leadership roles in different organizations. And a lot of the principles that I apply even today into this context with CURE are rooted in what I learned at Boeing. I mean, if you're talking about a matrix organization, most people would have no idea what we would be talking about, right? And in an engineering company like Boeing, where you have manufacturing engineering, a matrix organization where you have functional leaders and then direct managers is how everything goes. Everybody has two bosses, right? And so when you're in a hospital environment where you have a certain functional responsibility, like human resources, but then a day-to-day manager at the hospital who's running the hospital, so you have human resources, corporate office, day-to-day manager, it's a matrix, right? And so I've been experienced with a matrix organization, even though it's in healthcare. I learned that at Boeing. So I think there are a lot of principles we can apply from business to nonprofit work that are helpful. There's some that aren't, but there are a lot that are helpful.
With his pedigree and commitment to serve, Justin's experience would be invaluable to any nonprofit seeking to tackle pressing social issues. But Justin ultimately focused on the challenge and complexity of bringing healthcare to underserved communities and making it less daunting, more measurable, and much more attainable.
The first opportunity I had to serve at a nonprofit was with a small but very innovative organization. And they were doing community-based healthcare programs, community-based economic development programs. And working through some of those programs and opportunities, it became very clear that access to quality healthcare for families living in poverty is very unreachable or unattainable. And so you have kids who have very simple sicknesses who can't go to school because they can't buy the very basic drugs that they need to care for that. Or they're going to sort of traditional doctors who may have a different sort of take on how to handle common ailments. Even in that space, it becomes very clear that if you don't have money or you live far away from a health center, the quality of life really does suffer. And there's a lot of statistics that back this up. You know, I'm not sort of advocating for one solution or the other, but I think the idea that we have such good healthcare so readily available to us, and we don't even understand that that's not even in people's perception. When we have people come to a hospital, sometimes they didn't even know that these things existed. So that point of reference for us, and you move into a more rural environment or a highly impoverished area, and a lot of people are just struggling with really basic things that could be treated with some really basic healthcare. And then they also have some more complicated things, which is the space we fill, where we're providing a specialized surgical care that would just never be available to families. So healthcare, access to healthcare, really does empower people to go to school and to have jobs and to not miss time doing all of those things. And that's really been a passion of mine since the last 15 years. So we did some work with water and sanitation in a community environment, and now fortunate enough to be able to provide acute surgical care through our hospital network.
The African continent is vast, not only in size and diversity, but also in population and potential. Africa's young, growing population is home to 18% of the world's population. At the same time, it carries the bulk of the disease burden. The continent represents 25% of all cases of disease in the world, yet it has just 1.3% of the world's healthcare workforce at its disposal. The core of Cure International's mission is to help tackle that profound disparity. Their focus is on serving children living in impoverished communities in Africa and beyond, and they do this by preventing and treating serious health conditions that would otherwise turn into permanent disabilities. This would be challenging for any organization to do, and Cure International has faced plenty of challenges since their founding in 1998. Fortunately, Justin joined the team right in the middle of one of those massive challenges, the COVID pandemic.
Starting in the middle of the pandemic was really tricky. We thankfully have a really good medical team. We have a really good leadership team. And it was, a war room mentality. We met three times a week to work through all of the issues that were arising. And at the local level, it was a very, very confusing time, right? We decided we were going to stay open and do whatever we could to keep serving patients. And sometimes that meant we needed to reduce the number of beds that we had so we could do proper social distancing. And sometimes it meant that we needed to close operating rooms because everybody got COVID and we had to wait 2 weeks. But so we would just work through that. But we made this conscious effort to basically say, yeah, it's a pandemic. Yes, it's difficult. But it's not much more difficult than the day-to-day challenges most of our patients face anyway. So can we continue to find a way to serve them and to overcome all of these obstacles? And I really do think it brought us together. We have 8 hospitals. They're all over the world. They're in different places. But we had these common challenges, right? And we had to come up with solutions that essentially everybody could implement the same way, even with all of the different local requirements. So I think it was a bonding time for us. It was a chaotic time for us, but we were principled in deciding that we were going to stay open and keep serving. And in a way, we sort of proved to ourselves that we could be pandemic proof. And a lot of elective surgical care all over the world stopped during the pandemic. But we actually completed about 20,000 surgeries during the pandemic for kids.
Let's take a moment to consider that feat. Even during the pandemic, the team at Cure International found ways to keep working. As a result, thousands of kids had surgeries that transformed their lives and their futures. Instead of facing lifelong disabilities, these children were given the chance to live whole lives that allow them to play, go to school, and look forward to pursuing their dreams. Some of these surgeries were reconstructive, like for cleft palates and burns. Others were orthopedic, like for bowed legs and brittle bone disease. And then there's the suite of neurological procedures and surgeries for conditions like spina bifida and hydrocephalus. Of course, since the pandemic, the team at Cure International has not only continued the great work, but they've also expanded it. They're now completing over 300 surgical procedures every week. Yet with so much need, they're desperate to do more. And to help them get there, Justin is leaning hard on his for-profit background.
There are a lot of really important things in business that we can learn. From my experience at Boeing, I think some of the most important ones were really having a clear sense of metrics. And I know there's a lot of different understanding about metrics, but defining what the key performance indicators are and having a really good dashboard to look at those every day. So at the Boeing context, it's way different, right? So I could talk about a Cure context for us. Every week, we're looking at our cash balance. We're looking at how many surgeries we completed. We're looking at how many ministry outreach activities we had going on. Every week, we're looking at all of these metrics. We have about 12 of them that we look at. And you have a really good pulse on the organization when you have good data that you can get. It's reliable. And you can begin to see trends if you're looking at the data every week. So as an executive team, we meet every Tuesday. And you know, the third item on our agenda is our scorecard. And it took us about 6 months to figure out what those metrics were, and then another few months to figure out how to actually get the information because we don't have great technology systems yet. And then it started to really help us begin to understand how the organization is performing and, you know, are we going to run out of money or, you know, do we have too much? And to begin to flex some of our decision-making with data that's actually informing where the organization sits today. So at Boeing, we had these really good scorecards and they had color coding and things like that. So it was really easy to know if projects are behind or over budget or, you know, those sorts of things. And so coming into this space, I think we sometimes don't even feel comfortable counting things or looking at those metrics regularly. I know for us, our board, we look at those every quarter and we agree like these are the top 10 things that we're just counting. They're not the only things that matter. They're not totally comprehensive. They're fallible, right? But if we look at them with regularity, we can see trends and we can see the areas of growth. We can see where we're behind. And then we have to start explaining those things, right? And so if all of our surgeries just drop off a cliff for 4 weeks, I think we should go, what's going on? Everybody's sick, you know, they're at a training and what is informing those? And then how can we help make business decisions based on what the information's telling us?
Justin brings up an important observation about a key difference between nonprofits and for-profits. Whereas the business world is driven by data and ROI, many nonprofits seem to have an aversion to metrics. In my experience consulting nonprofit executives, I've felt the discomfort rise in the room when they're asked how they're measuring the success of their efforts. Reliance on qualitative data and stories is all too common, and often the lack of quantifiable evidence of missional impact limits their ability to obtain major gifts from those business-savvy leaders who are very interested in the return on their investment. But Justin knows that to overcome intractable issues related to health and poverty, his team needs to collect metrics and look for patterns. From there, they can build a strategic plan to disrupt those patterns and innovate solutions that will help them serve more children and give them hope for a life free from disability.
I'm not really interested in just being innovative to be innovative because I know that there are so many things that we would aspire to do to help serve kids better. And that's what I'm interested in innovating and facilitating those conversations and trying to get funds for those so that they're resourced. I can give you an example. We just launched a new initiative to modernize our technology across the network. And what do I mean by that? It's really about having electronic medical records for our patients. And it's pretty much commonplace here. And for mission hospitals across the world, we're still using the giant binders and shoving papers in and have x-rays. And if you imagine you do a mobile clinic like us, we go 1,000 kilometers out of the city and you have to take these giant bins of medical records with you and hope you didn't forget one for a kid you're going to see out there, you know. Otherwise, the whole visit was spoiled. And over on this side where you and I go to the doctor, you know, we plug it in the app and make an appointment and we could see our x-ray right there. My son just had a CT scan, I can see his x-rays in 48 hours or his diagnostics in 48 hours. And that's just so far from what the norm is in our environments. So We got together as an organization and said, how much of a priority is this? And ultimately, how much will it affect that patient, that child? And will it allow us to serve more children? And can we do it at a higher quality? Yes. Why hasn't it been done? Well, there's a million reasons why it's not been done. It's complicated. It's expensive. It requires a lot of project management, these sorts of things. And so we've been working on this for about 2 years to try to get to a point where we could really have a good plan on how we would modernize our technology in a way that would still be easily adopted at a local level, but was something that would really move the dial for our quality of care and the number of patients we can serve. And then we had to find some wonderful people who would believe in that and resource it. And so it won't be flashy, you know, from an innovation standpoint, but 3-4 years down the road, we'll have electronic medical records for everybody in the network. We can share those files with patients. So if they're at a primary care doctor, they can see what the information has. We can send it to their smartphone. And we're making this technology available to other Mission hospitals in an open source fashion so that they don't have to go through all of this either. So that's innovation for us. And it meets a very practical need too.
For Justin, innovation is meant to result in a practical solution. That's why his team takes a collaborative approach. By bringing people together to discuss the challenges they face, by seeking to truly understand each other's perspectives, that lays the foundation for innovating with impact. Creating a digital record system might sound unimaginative, but for the people who will use it, for whom it will change lives, it's the perfect example of practical and impactful innovation. It benefits hospitals, health professionals, and patients in the long term. And designing it as an open source solution ensures that others will use it as well, giving it the widest possible reach. This model is the simplest, easiest, and clearest explanation of what strategy should be. It brings people together to clarify where they're going, plan how they'll get there, and create systems of accountability to accomplish it. This model is not only effective, it has also created a team environment that empowers each person to accomplish so much more for the mission.
I'll share one that wasn't my idea, because we really do have amazing talent across our network. One of the things that we did that I think is undervalued or underappreciated is standardize. And what I mean by that is trying to get to a place where we have a standard set of equipment. For example, you can imagine a hospital environment and having a million different pieces of equipment from a million different manufacturers, and trying to maintain that or to repair it would be really difficult. And so standardizing is difficult because you actually have to make hard decisions about what you are doing and what you're not doing. And in our context, it means we're standardizing the type of care we provide at a hospital. We are going to do orthopedics. We are going to do plastics and reconstructive work, but we're not going to do this, and we're not going to do that, and we're not going to do that. And it just helps you to have clarity on whom your mission is serving and how you're providing that service. And so we standardized our equipment, we're standardizing our services, and we're going through this process now of standardizing our practices and our policies and even the way that we manage people. I think we always have to create space for local customization of these types of things. But really, it does a disservice if everybody has to recreate the wheel over and over again, right? And we've gone through this process of, okay, everybody do things your own way. There's really good things about that, and there's really challenging things about that. And I think now we've gone to a place where actually, if we do standardize a lot of the practices we have, it allows us to deliver our mission better, and we can all get pretty excited about that. But you do lose some local customization. There is a little bit of a loss of local control. And so that's the flip side of that and the tension that we wrestle with when you make those decisions.
There's a delicate balance between policies and process and people, isn't there? That's the tension Justin is talking about. On one hand, you can have processes and standards that help streamline the work and offer a high level of service no matter what context your team is operating in. On the other hand, you want your team to be able to make decisions on the ground in real time, adapting their work to the local needs as much as it will help them accomplish their mission. As Justin will tell you, Cure International is able to make huge strides in their mission thanks to their efforts to standardize equipment, policies, and procedures. But this is just part of their recipe for success.
I think some of the biggest decisions that we make are the people we bring into the organizations. And the process by which we bring them in. And so I'm sort of speaking about recruitment and the process of recruiting and the decisions we make to hire people or transition people are probably where we make the most mistakes. And oftentimes it's just maybe bringing in a person who's not a great fit and we're trying to make it work and it's just not working and, you know, things like that. Or we miss somebody who's really great. And we just couldn't make that connection where they really wanted to be. We couldn't understand if they wanted to be part of the mission with us, you know. And I feel like most of the decisions that I make today are either strategic. Where are we going? What are we doing? How are we going to get there? Their communication. What are we going to communicate to who and how often and when and which mediums are we going to use? And people. And if you're a growing organization, one of the things we're really learning here is how to develop a really good recruitment strategy that just brings the right people to us so that when we're looking at a role, we have options. And in our environment, it's very difficult to find great people, right? We can't pay what Google pays. And, you know, we're trying to find missionally aligned people who are also professional in what they do. But I do think a lot of times we hire people that are friends or acquaintances from church or whatever, and maybe they don't necessarily meet the professional profile we're looking for, or we eliminate people too quickly, too. So there's two sides of this thing where it's a very difficult and delicate balance, and I don't claim to have figured it out, but I do think the people we bring in are really, really important decisions we make, and they're very, very difficult to do.
Every nonprofit leader is familiar with this challenge. You set out to solve a pressing social issue, but you have precious few resources, which makes it harder than ever to find the right people for the mission. At the same time, you're trying to cultivate a culture that will fuel your team to accomplish more than you thought possible, instead of dragging your people down and creating mission drift.
We've gone through an exercise recently about updating our core values and having our culture really reside around core values and those impacting our behavior. And it's tricky because people have a different understanding of values. The ones we had were really good already. And so it's kind of like, why are you changing those? Or what are we doing? Why? There's a lot of history with a lot of these things. And at the same time, we're trying to build a culture, a Cure culture. And some of that just means refining the values. How do we communicate those? How often do we communicate those? How do we evaluate people on those? We're just now entering that space. And it's tricky. And we're learning. And, you know, I have an executive coach who's helping me walk through these different things of, you know, we work with a board to do it. Okay, then we work with a management team to get feedback. And I mean, we've been working on this forever. And just making sure that they're right and that people's voice was heard and that we worded them correctly and that we have the right icon for this one. Building culture around that, I think, is something we're leaning into right now. And it just takes a long time. And it's just something we're trying to do as we build a Cure culture around core values that have influencing our behaviors, and it's difficult.
In the book, Culture Built My Brand, which is the book I wrote with Mark Miller about the intersection of brand and culture, we define culture as a code manifested through a pattern of behaviors and decisions that reveal your actual values. As Justin points out, having core values does not automatically shape behavior or build culture. The challenge is to operationalize and integrate those values across the organization so that everything you do is informed by and held accountable to those values. That's why values need to be immediately clear and actionable. When values are abstract ideas or blurry concepts, they don't shape culture. because culture is shaped by consistent patterns of behavior, which means our values must clearly define the behavioral standard and then be modeled by leadership. To survive rapid change and disruption, nonprofits need a strong culture to guide them through any and every threat. Threats we wish we could ignore. Threats like this one.
I think a lot of our challenges revolve around technology. We just went through an assessment, an internal assessment of cybersecurity. And there's a lot of reasons we started doing that. And that is a whole world in and of itself, right? But our thought was, we're building these systems, this electronic medical record system, we have inventory systems and financial systems and all of these systems that if they were compromised could have a negative impact on our organization. And so we've gone through a whole cybersecurity assessment of where we have vulnerabilities, which we've already addressed, and we'll continue to do so through some tools and things like that. But that pace of change is dynamic and I think under-resourced in a lot of nonprofit organizations, which is why I think we're seeing cybersecurity threats happen to nonprofit organizations because we're just not resourced with that. We don't have a lot of IT budget. We don't have a lot of the nuances and the understanding of what's happening out there. And so that's scary, right? Because that world is deep, it's dark, and it's happening. I mean, last week, almost everybody in this office got a text message from me wanting them to buy eBay gift cards or whatever it was, right? But if you think about that and how intrusive that is for people and just that simple phishing thing, right? So I think IT budgets are going to grow. I think bringing in specialty IT people to organizations like ours is a key thing of what we're doing, because we really do have to be on the front edge of this stuff to make sure our mission keeps moving forward.
We've covered a lot of the challenges and accomplishments Justin and his team are experiencing, but there's one more that I want to get to. Like cybersecurity, this is an issue we've all been concerned about. It's also one that has wider implications for a global nonprofit like Cure, and it's an issue Justin is determined to prioritize.
I think you've by now realized I'm an operator, right? So everything is kind of very tactical. The challenge of inflation is something we're all tired of talking about, right? But if you think about inflation in some of the countries where we serve and its impact on some of your lower compensated employees, their ability to provide food for their family is compromised, right? And so that's not okay with us. And so we're going through a process of trying to understand, how is inflation impacting a family's living wage at one of our hospitals? Because some of these inflation rates, the inflation rate in Zimbabwe is somewhere between 300 and 1,000%. Nobody really knows, right? But it's astronomical. So your cost of an apple the next month can be double. Just imagine living on the same compensation, but trying to pay for that. The cost of living for all of our coworkers is becoming quite significant for us. And so, you know, just to do the same amount of work as you did the year before costs 10 or 15% more. And how do you resource that? And how do you rally even the donor community around the fact that this is real? It's not 10%. It's not 7% like we have here. It's 50, 100%. And it's real for people who are just trying to put food on the table for their family.
It's big challenges like that that keep nonprofit leaders awake at night. How do you move forward and make wise, strategic decisions when you've got team members who can't afford to put an apple in their kid's lunch? There's no easy answer. But you'll be in a better position to find a solution by committing to listen to your team, understand their experiences, and bring them into your decisions. As Justin's work shows, that's part of great leadership. Combine that with operational excellence, and you'll serve not only the mission, but also your colleagues. As Justin will tell you, however, all of this requires a key leadership trait.
I would say the last 10 years in a leadership role at a nonprofit have probably brought a lot more humility than I thought they would bring to me. And there's a lot of learning that goes on from failure, too. And I think being reflective about that, it just changed, I think, my own demeanor and the way that I try to manage and lead and bring really good people around me who can challenge me and for me to learn from them. So I think I'm probably a lot more humble than I was at 31. I don't know if that sounds weird bragging about that, but you know what I mean? I think we go through these lessons where we get to a place where we realize we're actually not that great. And we make poor choices and we do the best we can with the information we have, but sometimes we're just wrong. And being much more willing to admit that we're wrong, to be much more grateful for the other contributions people make. I don't need to be the smartest person in the room. And to be much quicker to say, I'm sorry when I do something wrong, I think are lessons that I'm continuing to learn.
Think about your own experiences. When have you been willing to admit that you were wrong about something? What was the impact it had on your team and on the work? By embracing humility, it actually does something powerful in the rest of your team. It shows them that it's okay to be wrong, that they can take risks and take ownership, both when the risks pay off and when they fail. This helps create a culture where your team feels confident that they can take risks and innovate for the sake of the mission. I'm excited to see how Justin and his team continue to learn, develop, and grow the mission at CURE. Before we finish, though, Justin offered this advice for nonprofit leaders.
I think at the end of the day, all of our organizations are just a group of people trying to do something that they feel really passionate about. And how we develop them professionally and think about that is really important. How we compensate them is really important. How the office culture feels is really important. I think understanding people, understanding culture is really important for the success of our mission and ultimately the longevity of our organizations. And I'm very much in a learning phase on that. I can just give you one example that I've done here that has really been helpful for me is whenever there's a death in the family for one of our employees, our coworkers, our colleagues, I try to write a note, a condolences note to them. They may live in the Philippines. They may live in Kenya. And it's a very small thing for me to do, but it's a very meaningful thing for them to know that we care, right? And right or wrong, they embody we as me. And that's not anything to do with Justin. It has to do with the seat we sit in, right? I sit in a seat. And I occupy that role for all of our employees. And if I don't care about it, then they think that they're unseen or they don't care. And so that's a small thing I've tried to do where I just take a keen interest in different people's, the circumstances that they're facing and difficult times in their life. And making sure that we just acknowledge them, see them. I think those things matter to people because they do matter to us. We want people to be seen. We want them to know they matter. We want them to know they care because we really like to celebrate good people and you're awesome. This is great, whatever. But even more so in the difficult times and meeting people where they're at, it's a lot of small things that add up to be a big, meaningful part of who your culture is.
Those are words every nonprofit leader should take to heart. Embrace that we as me mentality. That means not letting your teams get siloed, but constantly reinforcing the idea that we're in this together, that we seek to understand one another, and that we will ultimately have each other's backs. So how can you model this for your team? Justin has taken the approach of handwriting personal messages of condolences to grieving staff members, no matter where in the world they are. It's a small act that takes a bit of time and effort, but it tells each team member that he sees them and holds them in deep regard. And that's exactly the type of leader everyone wants to serve with, especially when they've committed to tackling a critical social problem like the team at CURE has. Supported by Justin's leadership, that team is making incredible progress in helping heal kids from potentially lifelong disability. To help you find a similar path for your nonprofit, I want to leave you with three takeaways. First, few of us have the same wealth of tactical and operational training that Justin has, but it's still prudent to take the time to nail down your management basics. If you don't have the skills or the time, who can you ask for support? Getting a handle on your data, decision-making, and governance will infuse your leadership with the clarity you need to further the mission. Next, what can you do to make complexity and unruly challenges more manageable? As we've just heard from Justin and the experience of Cure International, standardizing their processes and equipment has improved quality, brought focus, and made their work more efficient. Where can you simplify complexity and create standards that help your team be more impactful in their work? Finally, celebrate and support your people. The most important decisions you make are who you bring into your organization and how you treat them. It can feel daunting to take the time and energy to understand people while at the same time staying ahead of change, cultivating the right culture, and keeping it all aligned with values. But none of that matters if you don't take care of your people. How can you better celebrate your team? And what can you do to help them feel heard and supported? Look for practical ways to empower them, to encourage them to create a bigger impact for the shared mission. I'm Ted Vaughn, and this is Future Nonprofit. If you want to hear more stories from experts in the industry to learn how to take your nonprofit into the future, subscribe to the podcast and visit makehistoric.com.
Future Nonprofit is a production of Lower Street and Historic Agency. Produced by Mark Miller, Ben Crannell, James Bladel, and Ted Vaughn. Edited by Ben Crannell. Visit futurenonprofit.com for a transcript of this episode.